everyone, and welcome to episode 99 and my 1300th episode of this podcast, of season 11 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for this momentous episode is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back once again for yet another season, Alan. And yes, you've been on every season. I know you keep asking, and I think it's because you drink too much and you just don't remember. So there you go.
You know what? Drinking is fine on any day that ends in Y. But thank you so much for having me back. Yeah, you know what's crazy? And honestly, I have lost track, and you've corrected me multiple times. But I think I have promoted my appearance on this coming season more than I have any previous season on my show.
That's true. The question is do any of your listeners, have any of them migrated?
I don't know. They've never told me one way or the other. They've never come back and complained to me, so that's good. But they've never come back and praised, so I don't know.
Right. None of them have ever said, Alan, stop that. Stop.
They never said, please don't recommend that guy. No, I've never gotten that. No negative feedback.
That's good, too. All right. So we will begin with my first question, which you probably know what the question is going to be. What is your background with Band of Brothers?
So Band of Brothers actually cuts back to my first marriage when I was still with wife number one, where the big thing
the first marriage is with wife number one. Usually. That's the way it usually works.
Well, okay, right. Anyway, we had cable, and I think – I can't remember why we got HBO, but for some reason – I don't remember if it was something that came with our subscription or whatever, but – because we normally didn't have a lot of the movie channels, but for some reason we decided to have – we had HBO. And obviously being a huge fan of Saving Private Ryan, having watched – certainly not my share of World War II movies like you and a lot of your guests this season, but I have seen several, especially with my dad growing up. I'm kind of a World War II fan. I've watched a lot of the D-Day movies, Longest Day, obviously Saving Private Ryan and others that have hit the kind of the European theater, but also the Pacific theater. I remember being so excited about Tom Hanks and Spielberg being behind this miniseries. No idea that 9/11 was going to be a tie-in to when this was going to start to drop. And I know you've said it throughout the course of the season. I'm not entirely sure that it would have had the kind of staying power had not so many people watched it because of post 9/11. I think everybody wanted to watch it. And because they did, they saw how good it was. I mean, I'm not saying the quality, it's phenomenal and it should be standing the test of time. But there was just something about when the whole nation is suddenly re-energized with the idea of patriotism and overcoming the great evil and being the good guys fighting the bad guys, this show dropped at the perfect time.
Yeah, it really did. I don't know if that's if you can look at that as a good thing or a bad thing for it. It's just
prominent. I mean, obviously you would never want a nation attacked, but as far as the quality of what this series brings, it's rare. There's, Game of Thrones contain that kind of writing and that sort of cultural, everyone wanted to watch it. It failed, unfortunately. Game of Thrones for me failed in the last season. I think it was just poor writing. They rushed. They got everything that was great about it just went to crap in the final season. This being a limited series, I think was perfect because they had the beginning, the middle, and the end. They knew exactly what they were going to tell, and they brought us along from D-Day through the end of the fall of Europe, basically for the surrender of Europe, which is perfect. It's a perfect 10-part mini or limited series.
Right. Okay. And again, I mean, you've heard other people say that, that there were supposed to be even more, but they had to cut it down to 10 episodes, the way that it was originally, set up.
Had it been 12, it would have been a perfect 12-part. The fact is they weren't going to write season after season after season. There was probably enough material, but the fact of the matter is because they knew this was all they were going to do, they could have quality from day one to the end. They weren't again, I think it's one of those series that just you can go back to and you can watch it for the writing. You can watch it for the cinematography. You can watch it for the history. You can watch it for the character engagement. You can watch it even for the humorous dialogue. And then for the interviews of all the actual people that are peppered throughout the episodes, there's just so many ways you can go back and rewatch this, and every one of them is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. Which is why I've been spending the last 98 episodes talking about this.
Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I have enjoyed listening all the way through. So I've enjoyed especially your interviews. The writers, phenomenal, having the authors of a couple of these episodes, some of the actors or behind the scenes, some of the folks that have built careers or jobs off of tours and visiting these places. It's made me want to go seek some of these folks out and say, okay, if I get that, lottery winning and I want to go on a Band of Brothers, tour of everything from, Normandy Beach all the way through, how do I do that? Because I would love to do that someday.
All right. Well, I'll just ask me and I'll set you up.
Okay, cool.
From that perspective. And hopefully I will have another writer on at some point. I'm still trying to work on the head writer, So you never know.
Well,
there's three more interviews coming up. So, we'll have to wait and see. There's four more interviews coming up. So we'll have to see who they are. Right. The truth is, as of recording, I have no idea who they will be.
Well, to kind of close off that opening question, because it was a weekly drop, it was something we looked forward to each week when the new episode. So I literally watched them live each week when they dropped at the moment they dropped, because it was programmed time. It wasn't like today where you can stream it or you could catch up on a couple of weeks. It was the episode playing live on cable. So you had to be there 9 o'clock Eastern time to watch the episode.
Right. And then they dropped two at a time. So that was even better, because if you look at the way that the runtime works for both of that, for the episodes, they're pretty much paired up so that they come as close as possible to 2 hours, putting them together, which is a cool idea to do it that way.
And with the quality of something like this, and again, you've not to beat a dead horse because you've talked about it, we really got five motion pictures that were all basically part of one overall story.
Yeah.
This was not TV. This was cinema. This was film.
That's right. And again, the idea is to completely engage us, from start to finish with mm-hmm. the stories, with the characters, with the actors, with everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Very cool. So episode 99 begins with Winters becoming concerned and ends with Malarkey giving a sit rep. So basically, we left things yesterday with Winters basically being told that he now has to take the men out for a patrol, which mm-hmm. He's not too happy about it. And so it begins with Winters saying it's going to leave the patrol exposed. And you hear explosions behind them, stuff like that. And you see that a new officer shows up. And, it's Lieutenant Jones, played by mm-hmm. Colin Hanks. And he goes,
yeah, remarkably similar to a very young Captain Miller.
Yeah, very much so. And he goes, is this the company CP for easy? And Lipton goes, yes, sir. And then we get Lipton also showing up at the same time. I mean, it's great how you see Lipton is lying on the couch, sick,
mm-hmm.
and, he still stands up in order to give a little bit of, respect to Jones, who shows up. And, Webster then stands up also to give him a little bit of respect. And Jones goes, as you were. And he goes, Lieutenant Jones, looking for Captain Spears. Lipton goes, he's on his way, sir. Why don't you sit down? Lipton then says to Les, can you get me a cup of coffee? And then he turns to Jones and goes, you want a cup, sir? And he goes, no, thank you. He goes, all right. And then Jones looks around and says to Webster, so what platoon are you in? He goes, well, we're about to find that out, which is great. he has no idea yet where he's being put. I mean, we saw yesterday that Webster sort of, dated himself by starting to ask where all the injured and dead people were. Asking, mm-hmm. hey, where's Garnier? Where's Hubler? Where are all these people? And No, you've been missing for 4 months.
Right.
So,
Well, and that of course plays a huge element in this episode 8 with his voiceover, with his
Yeah,
narration.
for sure. And it's great. I mean, the way that they put this together, because they give us a new perspective from an old perspective type of thing.
Right. And what I love about it is he feels, and the actor does a great job of feeling like, wait a minute, you guys are acting like I'm a stranger. You know, you get the feeling even in his face of like, am I not supposed to be here? Am I, you know, like, I love this whole episode because it's so disconnected in some ways to the camaraderie of the opening of the beginning of the season or the series because of what they've been through
Well,
and the fact that he was absent for the last couple of major engagements, which, you know, impacted all of their lives
yeah,
tremendously.
but they also want to show us how it was for somebody to try to break in to this band of brothers, you know, because, you know,
Right.
Webster was part of them, then he wasn't part of them, you know, so now he has to put himself, back in with everybody else, and Jones is completely disconnected,
Well,
you
yeah,
know.
Jones is 100% outsider. And here's the thing, I loved it because you talked with Graham Yost about his device of using of the narration, a voiceover, if you will, for the first time came in the episode with Lipton. And it was a great device to get us from place to place, person to person. And it's like the writer here kind of just took and did the same thing, only from Webster. And what I love about it is because Webster, here's the thing, he's almost being punished because he didn't get back faster. And it's almost like they're
Not
questioning.
almost. He is being punished by everybody for that very fact.
Well, yeah. I don't think everybody to the same degree, but he definitely no longer feels like he's one of the group when he first
That's right.
started. He definitely feels like it's like that. I mean, it's like when you're in a clique. And all of a sudden, maybe a rumor goes around, and then you show up to like the party, and you're like, "What? Hey guys, what's?" And you're getting the cold shoulder, and you're like, "What happened?" And you just feel confused, discombobulated. And I love this episode for that because I think it works across multiple levels. I think all of them are at their wits' end at having gone through what they've gone through up to this point.
For sure. And then the shot changes and we're outside and we once again get Nixon and Winters talking, and Winters goes, "You got any soap? I need a shave." And Nixon goes, "I'll send some down." So again, once more we're getting to see that Winters' personality, that you know there are certain things that you need to do, especially as an officer, to you know to show your men and be an example. And, you know, even in a situation like this, I mean, we saw him in Bastogne do the same thing, you know, where he was just shaving with ice cold water, you know, or literally with ice.
Yeah. He is the model officer in the sense that he cares about his troops. He's gifted as a tactician, as a strategist, but he also understands showing the example and leading by
Correct.
example. I mean, he's the guy that when you join the military, you're hoping that's who's the guy that you're going to be following. Not, let's say, the Dykes of the world. Dyke.
Yes. It's true. It's the way it is. And
And unfortunately, every one of us have been in the military. We've actually had both. I mean, maybe I've been lucky. I've had the commander or the captain who I was like, wow, that guy's he's on it. He's personable. He's not so caught up in every effect. You know, he's not making you feel like you're afraid to show up for duty. You feel like you're part of the team. But at the same time, he is, you know, creases and decorum and just looks the part. And then I've had people where I'm like, I don't know that I can take orders from somebody who doesn't even know what they're talking about.
right, 100%. I mean, and that's what it is. I guess in all militaries, it's 50% these people and 50% those people.
Well, and you know, it's a common thing that happens sometimes in business. Sometimes people get promoted to their highest level of what's called incompetence. You know, hey, you're really good at this. Let's give you another promotion. Okay, fine. Then you're okay at this, but let's go ahead and give you another promotion. And all of a sudden you get promoted to the point where now you weren't good at that. You should have stayed where you were, but it's always based on promoting people. At some point, you get promoted past your competence.
Right. Sure. And these guys were lucky that Winters was there for them.
100%. I love him being the through line basically for all of this. He and Nixon, I think, but I think it's really Winters is the core that holds this story together from start to finish.
For sure. And then Nixon says to him, "Well, you know what you're going to do for this?" And he just turns to him and goes, "I'm going to let Spears handle it." And he goes, "Right." Because finally he has a commander of Easy who he knows he can trust. You know, if it was still Dyke, you know, he's found somebody who he knows he can give an order to, and you know, he can trust the type of decision he's going to make about it. After this little scene ends, we're back at the CP, and we get to see that Spear shows up, and then Jones stands at attention, and Lip goes, "Captain Spear, sir, this is Lieutenant Jones." He goes, "Listen, we go back in the back and stack out. There's some beds with fresh sheets." He goes, "I will, sir. Just trying to make myself useful, sir." And at this point, both Winters and Nixon show up. And again, this is just a great way to show that Spears is basically also caring for his men. You know, Lipton is sick, and he's saying to him, "Look, we're good for now. You know, I know you want to handle everything. You want to be the guy who's making sure that everything is done properly. But, you know, go rest. We need you healthy. You know, the way you are now is not going to help us later." You know, that's a, but Lip isn't like that. Lip is, "I got to be here. You know, all right, I have, you know, I'm sitting on the couch. I'm resting on the couch with a coffee and a blanket. And, you know, I'll eventually go." You know, that type of thing.
I find it interesting that when Spears walks in, are they gathering loot to put on the piano? Or are they, it's like he walks in with an ornate, like a miniature grandfather clock or a mantle clock.
Yes. Okay.
And there's all these other things on the piano.
As we're going to see in part nine, when we get to it, Spears is a looter.
Really? You don't say. I just love it because the composition of this scene from a perspective of bringing in this lieutenant who just graduated from West Point, which means he's a smart cookie. I mean, you could be in the military, you could still be an officer and not having gone to West Point. That's one of the premier military academies. The fact that he's so still hooked into the decorum, the standing, the, you know, tin hut, you know, officer on deck, and all of these men who have been just used to being, you know, basically a second away from being killed, a lot of that decorum has kind of slipped to the wayside.
No, but it's also when you're in a forward position. So the idea is that certain formalities are now just going to be done informally. You know, you don't need to snap to attention all the time. You don't need to do, and I can understand that. You know,
It's not a disrespect. No, I'm not suggesting. No. I'm not suggesting the men are disrespectful. It's the dichotomy of seeing the fresh officer who thinks this is how I'm supposed to run a command versus watching a command that has already been combat tested, and you got to give the men some latitude. They can't be on edge military bearing 24/7 or they'll snap. They have to have some leniency.
Exactly. That's right. And it's a great catch by you, the looting. the early looting, I guess you can say. You know, I guess the writers all got the, you know, got the note, you know, whenever you can have Spears loot. Makes sense. You know, hey, as he'll say later on, finders keepers. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of folks did that toward the end if they weren't doing it along the way. It wasn't just about guns. It was when they saw all of the opulence of the enemy, why not take some of it? Especially since so much of that opulence was probably confiscated by other people.
Sure. And so then Winters, after he shows up, goes, "Listen up, regiment wants a patrol for prisoners." And Nix goes, "This one comes straight from Colonel Sink, so it's not my idea." And Winters continues and goes, "Since the river's the main line of resistance, we're going to have to cross it to get to them." Spears goes, what do we need to do? Winter goes, there's a three-story building on the enemy side, up the embankment. We know it's occupied. You can have 15 men. Think very hard about who you want to lead the patrol. You'll need a lead scout, a translator. I've got the entire battalion on covering fire. When? Tonight. 0100. Yes, sir. Spears, I want this one to be as foolproof and as safe as possible. Then Nix goes, yeah, don't take any chances on this one. We're too far along for that. So that's a great line for them to say at this point. You know, here it is. You know, we're they know that they're nearing towards the end of the war, and you know we'll see in later episodes that they emphasize it even more. You know, you don't want what's the phrase, short-timer's disease. You know, the idea that you know, don't do anything stupid. You know,
you don't want to get sloppy. But at the same time, you don't want to take any undue risk.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It's a combination, because I feel like these guys are like, hey, if this is almost over, what are we doing risking ourselves now? We get it early. We had to fight for this. But now nobody wants to be put in that last battle where it's like, hey, I made it until the last battle, but I still get killed.
And then Winter says,
I also think in the middle of this, when he's describing the op, I love the editor's decision to let his voice continue underneath. We get a shot of Jones at attention, who's trying to process it, because as an officer, he's trying to listen to the other officer, and he's literally thinking about, well, am I going to be involved in this, or what should I be doing? And then it cuts to Webster, who looks like, am I even part of this group anymore? He's not even making eye contact. That's he's right. Looking down. And one, you know, one showing attention, one who's fully involved, sort of like at military bearing, but probably is going to be the go-getter. I want to go. And the other guy's like, will I even be allowed to go? Am I even going to be accepted with these guys? I don't even feel like, well, I'm part of the team anymore.
Right.
It's wild to see that just those little.
Well, I think also cuts. The part of the question that Webster might be going through his mind right now is do I want to go? Do I want to take the risk? You know, that type of thing.
I mean,
he hasn't very come well be, back although, gung-ho. You know, again, we saw like when Garnier came back, we saw when Compton came back. These are guys that are all right, throw me back right into the maelstrom and give me the difficult stuff. Webster's not like that. Webster's like, okay, I was injured, I did my rehab, now I'm back. Yeah.
I also think because of however much longer he was gone, that gave him a lot longer to see the carnage of war in the hospital.
That's true.
You know, it's one thing when you go for a quick 2 week, you're getting stitched up and you go right back to the field, or you quote escape to get back because you don't want to be reassigned to a different group. And someone who may have been there a little bit longer and is seeing the totality of the cost of war, not just thinking of the glory of getting back with your friends and going back into battle. And I think everybody, to be honest, this whole episode to me is that moment where everyone's starting to feel that the joy and the stupidity of some of the things they did in the early battles, like especially at the beginning of the season, they're less glory hounds and much more worn. They're much harder. And you see it's like you've watched them age. They literally have that look of people who have been living a lifetime.
And part of the whole thing also is that you see, and we'll see it more throughout this part in part 9 and even part 10, that the new guys, they're the ones who still want to see the action. And the old guys are like, no, we just want to get home at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes along with the fact that someone might say to themselves, okay, I don't want to go home and say that I didn't do anything. You know, that.
And that's the other dichotomy at play here. I don't want to feel like the person who did nothing, and the people who already did their bit said, I already did my bit.
That's right. Don't make me do anything that I don't need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I joined the Navy, we learned that from my perspective, every time somebody said, you know what Navy stands for? Never again volunteer yourself.
There you go.
Nobody ever volunteered for anything. Like, well, I need 3 men. No, I'm not raising my hand.
Well, it could have worked with the paratroopers here also. You know, the airborne, they also volunteered. But they did it for the money.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. And Winters then takes Spears aside and goes, Spears, want to discuss who might go along? And then the camera takes us on a completely different focus, and we get to see a conversation between Nix And Jones, because Nixon just looks over and goes, "Who are you?" like just discuss this whole thing. "Who the hell are you?" And he goes, "Lieutenant mm-hmm. Jones, sir." And he goes, "Right, our West Pointer." "Yes, sir." He goes, "When'd you graduate?" "June 6th, sir." "June 6th of last year?" "D-Day." "Yes, sir." And he laughs and goes, "All right, don't get hurt." I mean, again, that's great.
I love Nixon. He does such a good job with just that one line and look. It's funny, but it's also borderline ominous. Like, don't get hurt. That's just great.
Yeah. And then we see right away that Jones is angsting to join them. And he goes, "Sir, I'd like to volunteer for the patrol." And then we're back with Winters and Spears. So Winters then says to Spears, "Talk to you in an hour." "Yeah." And Winters turns to Jones and goes, "Lieutenant Jones." And he just leaves. So, you know, Jones wants them to pay attention to him, but, you know, ain't going to really happen here.
Right. And the other thing is, we've seen along the way when they've brought in officers who, by the nature of military, there's a chain of command. The last thing they want is somebody who we're supposed to follow the rank into battle, who's never even spent one day in any kind of combat, has no clue what they're doing.
Correct.
Literally, they've got book smarts. Fine. They may have been brilliant tactical. They may have done sort of like Winters in training. Maybe he's a junior Winters. We don't know that. But these guys aren't going to take that chance.
Right. And over the course of this entire part, we'll see that these guys are not happy to follow Jones, you know,
right,
for that very reason.
Well, they've already kind of decided, well, he's the new lieutenant, he's obviously going to lead this. Like, they're already like fatalistic about it.
Right.
And we will find out later, there's a moment where they feel good about the fact that he may be going along, but he's not going to be in charge. But exactly. That's their biggest worry. Right. They don't want to follow orders from somebody who has no clue what they're doing.
Correct. And then
and it's fun, by the way, having been a military guy and understanding the chain of command and the need for the chain of command, I also fully understand it'd be stupid to put somebody in charge of a group, especially on a special assignment like this, that would be combat operations, having not had one day in any combat theater.
Correct. And Winters knows that. And he's not,
he absolutely does.
He's sure you're not going to make that mistake. Yeah.
And what I love is the kid is too idealistic. And of course, we were all there. We were all young ones.
Of course.
Of course, in his mind, he's like, well, of course I can do it. Of course, that's what I trained for. That's what I came here for. I didn't want to be put on the back bench. We all understand the exuberance of youth. All these guys had it at the beginning of the series.
That's right. That's very true.
That's why I love this episode so much, because it's only 10 episodes. So we're, you know, 3/4 of the way through at this point. And yet they bring in this one element that reminds us all these guys were like this kid for the most part when we started.
That's right.
And look at the difference from where we are now.
Yeah. That.
And then Webster's the in limbo. Webster's the guy who was here at the beginning, but left for long enough that now it's almost like he's considered a replacement.
That's right. They give us the viewpoint of three different viewpoints for this whole thing, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And then Spears and Lipton, you know, continue their conversation, and Spears goes, "You think a NOMCOM could lead this?" Because I can think of a few possibilities. Martin, Malarkey, Grant. Lipton then goes, "Honestly, sir, most of the NCOs could use a rest." And Jones is hears this, and he goes, "Captain, request permission to go on the patrol." And Lipton goes, "There's your answer." And Spear goes, "No." And he turns to him, "You don't have any experience. Report to 2nd Platoon." "Yes, sir." Tell Heffron, Ramirez, and McClung they're going. "Yes, sir." And Lip then introduces Webster and goes, "Sir, this is Private Webster." He goes, "Sir, I'm Private Webster from 1st Platoon. I just got back from the hospital and Lieutenant Foley told me to go to 2nd. But Sergeant Malarkey said I..." "Fine, 2nd. Take Lieutenant Jones, Lieutenant, OP2. So, like, get out of here. Go find the guys from 2nd Platoon. Yeah, more or less.
Go bother other people.
Exactly. Wait, we don't need you here.
Yeah.
Don't need you bothering us. And at least at this point, Webster's a little happy that he now is finding a home, I guess you can say.
Well, at least he's got something to do.
That's true. No, because up until now they've just been passing the hot potato type of thing. You know, nobody wants him, and now they're
funny.
I know. I did it on purpose.
Funny you mentioned potato.
Exactly. And then Webster says to Jones, "Come on," and the two of them are outside, and we hear gunshots in the background. And then Jones asks, "Are there any other officers in the platoon?" He goes, "No, sir, just Sergeant Malarkey." But they tell me he's getting a battlefield commission. Maybe he'll be assistant, sir. And one of the guys is out from the doorway. He goes, "Who's that?" And he goes, "Webster." He goes, "That's right. How you doing, Sergeant Keene?" He goes, "Hey, Webster." He goes, "Hey, Sarge, look what we just scrounged." And he shows him a whole bunch of potatoes. He goes, "We got some spuds." And he goes, "Hey, OP2, this way." And then, we hear that there's gunshots. And he goes, "Move it, go." And then we hear a mortar whistle. And they go, "Shit, they spotted us."
Again, in a scene that is two things happening simultaneously, these guys are so comfortable in their little town on this side of the river that there's moments that you almost act like there's no war going on, and in the blink of an eye, incoming and gunshots. It's the wildest thing, because nobody is, until they hear the sounds, they're not walking around with a sense of urgency like they're going to be picked off, and yet they still could be picked off. It's just kind of a wild duality that they're existing in right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also great that the guys that are already there are acting very differently than Webster and Jones. Webster and Jones are... Yeah,
exactly.
You know, don't know what to expect. You know, obviously anyone in their right mind is going to be finding cover when there are mortars and gunshots, happening all around. But, the guys that are used to it, it's a little different, you know.
Right. It's almost like they're, I don't want to say tempting fate, but it's like they've lived this long with massive combat that the occasional gunshot no longer means a whole lot to them.
Exactly. And they basically just try running across the street. They go, "They spotted us. Is that it? I don't know. I think so. Go, go, go. Come on, come on." And then we hear someone scream in the background, "All clear, all clear. Okay. All clear, all clear." And then you hear even an airplane go by. Another explosion happened.
By the way, the handheld camera work here, much like, of course, what they used a lot of in Saving Private Ryan, works very well here, because we're crouched low to the ground. Completely. These guys are moving in continuous movement. You've got the explosions, the debris. It's really effective.
Right. And I love the way the shot when Webster grabs the duffel bags and throws them over the railing or the post of where he needs to go. But the camera shot is from below. You know, it's giving us an angle. You know, it's like looking up at the two of them, because they're theoretically on the ground. They're crouching on the ground, but we still see them from below as this is happening. So it's a great shot.
Love it.
And then Jones stops Webster and he goes, wait. It was Efren, McClung, and he finishes his sentence. He goes, "Ramirez, come on." And he goes, "Right." So, then the two of them, basically jump over the railing in order to get inside. And they're back, I guess, in the seemingly safer place indoors. And Webster goes, "Hey, guys." And he looks at one of the beds and goes, "Is this taken?" "No, go ahead." He goes, "Sergeant, this is Lieutenant Jones. Just assigned to 2nd Platoon." And he goes, "Malarkey, Platoon Sergeant." And then Jones goes, "Congratulations on the battlefield commission."
Oh my God, it's so cringy.
"They're making you an officer, no? Me? No. You must be thinking of First Sergeant Lipton." "Oh, my mistake." And he goes, "So you're without a platoon leader?" "No, not anymore, Lieutenant." And he goes, "Right." He goes, "So you want to introduce me to the men? Well, some are sleeping downstairs, and the rest are right here."
I got to say, It's a combination of introducing what would be a terrible rookie mistake as an officer, hearing some hearsay or thinking that what he heard from somebody else is 100% already known by everybody, and congratulating this guy on his field commission. Even if he heard people discussing that it's coming, or that he's been recommended, or that he's going to get it, doesn't mean the person who's receiving it's been told that yet.
Correct.
So it shows a really green mistake. Like, think about what they're showing us in that lack of judgment is illustrative of why the guys are hesitant to follow this guy into anything, because if he's going to make a mistake with just basic information, imagine leading a patrol.
Okay, but there is a little bit of a game of telephone here, you know, because as we saw yesterday, you know, someone told Webster that Malarkey is getting the commission, and then Webster mm-hmm. today passes on that information. So,
but you know, the fact is,
I agree with you. He's not checking. He's not fact checking.
You know? Right. And it's one thing if this was just a college graduate who just happened to get recruited, so he's automatically an officer because of his degree, and they just kind of shove him through OCS to get to the front. This is a West Point guy. That should have been something that would have been drilled into him about information and containing information, and you don't share stuff with the enlisted that hasn't already come down from the official, you know, channels.
Right. Right. But again, he's doing this to get favor with Malarkey. He's doing it because he wants to show him, I'm an officer, but I still want to be your friend.
That was the second thing. That shows his mistake was his eagerness to try to say, hey, I'm a good guy. Hey, I want to be involved. Hey, I care about you guys. It shows he does care. Yes, he does want to befriend. He does want to make those connections. But it was the wrong way to do it.
Correct.
But I think he's so eager to prove himself that he made the mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Excellent. And as Malarkey is basically saying, don't bother everyone right now. Some guys are sleeping and these guys are here, so just don't bother them. That's where this 5-minute segment ends. So, Alan, is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular segment?
So I've seen, just about this segment, I've seen Band of Brothers straight through 5, maybe 6 times. Getting ready for this one, I was like, God, that Malarkey guy is so familiar all of a sudden. I've never recognized him before. And then it hit me. He's on the Orville.
Yes, he is.
And I was like, I recognized his facial expressions and some of his sort of sarcasm. I'm like, where have I seen him before? And I had to look it up because I couldn't make the leap. And then as soon as I see it, I can't unsee it. I'm like, oh my God, it's from the Orville.
That's right.
So I love, because you've been saying this along the way, how many people either were just getting their start or this was the vehicle that gave them that launching pad. Some people, this may be the best thing they've ever done, and they've done a lot of things, but maybe not to this level. But it's amazing the amount of talent that was in this cast. And I just, it blows me away to watch it again from a perspective of, you know, years later, and knowing that I watched it back in 2001 and that it still can have nuance and impact, and it can still emotionally affect me. I get really embedded with these characters. And when we lose them, we're used to that now in the sense of series where people die, and it's reality because it's based on a real thing, but it still hurts. You still feel for these people. It's almost like the way they filmed it, the way they kind of brought us in, you almost feel like you're part of the group watching it. And so when someone dies, it has, at least for me, when I watch it, I get an emotional affection. I'm emotionally affected.
Me too. I love that. I mean, again, I watch these guys and because I've seen it more than 6 times, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, when I watch them, these are people I know, and I, you know, I care about them, right, and I want to see that everything works with them and everything's good, and you know, and that they're going to survive, you know, that type of thing. Even though I already know what's going to happen to all of them, you know, but still, it's a great feeling watching them, and again, you feel that these are people you know.
Yeah. I get the same thing that happens to me cinematically. Like every time I would rewatch Titanic, I'm like, okay, this is the time they figure a way how to survive. Like I almost in my head hope it's a different ending because I already know what's going to happen. In Game of Thrones, you watch the Red Wedding. Like, okay, this is the time they catch it in time, but you know it's not. You know they're all going to get whacked. But you're so hoping it's different this time because you want to see the good guys win. You don't want to see the good guys get killed. I love when a series or a movie can do that, where you can watch it over and over and over, and you hope, well, this is the time that the movie's different.
And it doesn't, unfortunately.
No, it's not. It's not. And I don't know if you get that, but that happens to me all the time. Like, my hopeful side wants to see a different outcome.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, you know, just because you do something once and it doesn't work doesn't mean you're going to can do the exact same thing again and it's going to change.
Wait, are you serious? Is that really Einstein in this now?
Maybe.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed getting reacquainted with the series again. It may be one of the finest limited series that's ever been.
I completely agree. All right. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top five fictional movie bands. So, Alan, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. I don't think you've had this, at least, well, I know there's a gap between when we record and they're released, but number five, Steel Dragon from the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg.
Nope. Nobody has used that one.
Which I'm still surprised because there was some great metal. Well, of course, I'm a metal guy. Yeah. Jennifer Aniston as well. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Steel Dragon by in the movie Rockstar. Number four, you have had this at least a couple of times, but how do you beat Stillwater from Almost Famous? You almost feel like they were following a real 70s rock band. I mean, it felt like real. I loved it. Number three, I know they only had the one like hit and it was kind of played on the radio, but I'll never forget the scene. And it always hits me. What would it be like to know that your record is playing for the first time on the radio and you're hearing your own song on the radio? And that is The Wonders, That Thing You Do.
The Oneiders.
Love. I just, that whole scene where they're like, they're just kids. They can't believe that their song is playing on the radio. It's great. Number two. And I count this as a fictional band, but Donna and the Dynamos from Mamma Mia. Sure, they were singing ABBA songs, but in the movie, it's Donna and the Dynamos. And I'm a massive ABBA fan. My wife and I could listen to all of the hits of ABBA all day long. So can't not have that.
Aren't they doing a third one now or something? I think I'd heard that somewhere.
Maybe. I'll tell you, I'm not a musical fan. Really, I like Les Mis and maybe Phantom of the Opera, and that's about it. Oh, I like Sound of Music, but I'm not a musical guy. Mamma Mia, the reason I love it is not because of the acting, not because of the filming, not because of the stage play. It's literally they're just trying to figure out how to make every ABBA song work in telling the story. So
yeah, I've always wanted to see Moving Out, which does the same thing with Billy Joel songs. I've never seen it because it's again, I don't even know if you can still find it on stage, but you know, they haven't made a movie of that one yet. So
number one, and I think I have another one that we've gone this deep in the season and no one has even broached it as a runner up, but it's my number one. It's a song, they've got a couple of songs. This was a release. This one I listened to almost once a week at some point. I've got a 80s mix channel and it comes through. Ellen Aim and the Attackers is the movie name. The band was called Fire Inc. and it's from Streets of Fire.
Nope, nobody has mentioned Streets of Fire.
So Ellen Aim and the Attackers, you listen to that song, Tonight Is What It Means to Be Young and Going Nowhere Fast, both produced by Jim Steinem, fresh off of with Meatloaf and a lot of other artists. Bonnie Tyler, you know, just that whole epic sound. In fact, we were coming back in the car and Nowhere Fast was coming up in the playlist. And I said to my wife, because she didn't know what it was from, I said, imagine Meatloaf singing this song. And she goes, oh my God, this could be a Meatloaf song. I'm like, that's because it was produced by Jim Steinem. It's epic. It's awesome. I love it. Loved everything about the movie. I'm sad that they didn't make the trilogy like they were supposed to. I think people didn't know what they were getting when they went to go see the first film, and it just never went from there. But Walter Hill literally wanted a trilogy set in this fabled musical world. And because the first movie didn't do well, they never made 2 and 3. That was the video they had out to sell the movie. That was the music video that had the actors in the scenes. And yeah, we had the big scene at the end. They're fighting each other with the pickaxe. It's freaking great.
Okay, well, I will watch that later today to refresh.
You've never seen Streets of Fire?
I've seen it. I just don't remember the song. So.
Okay, you can just find the video anywhere
I didn't say I was going to watch the movie. I was going to watch the video.
Okay. it's one of my all-time. It's definitely 80s, but it's Jim Steinem level 80s. It's epic. It's epic. It's great. I love it. So that's my number one.
Very cool. All right, and now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
Yeah.
And around and around and around the wheel goes.
Uh-huh. Taking a long time.
No, it's as long as it always takes. This is a movie from 1962 starring Steve McQueen and Bobby Darin. You want more information?
With Steve McQueen and who?
And Bobby Darin. It was directed by Don Siegel, you know, who did the Dirty Harry movies and was good friends with Clint Eastwood. And it's a small squad of soldiers that need to hold off a German attack.
Hell is for Heroes.
Very good. Nicely done.
I had to think about that for a second. Steve McQueen's been in a few movies.
Yeah. Not that many, but yeah.
Yeah. No, not that many.
Well, he did also die at a relatively young age, so. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So, Alan, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Alan Sanders?
Sure. If you are into the news of the day, especially on the more national / world stage, I do a daily political talk show called The Alan Sanders Show. You can find it wherever you find your podcast. Just look for The Alan Sanders Show. It's spelled A-L-A-N, just a four-letter word.
Oh, we don't talk about four-letter words.
Well, don't bleep it. It's not that kind of four-letter word. Although a lot of people might think it is, but I don't.
Maybe in editing I'll bleep you. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So Alan and I will be back again tomorrow. But until then, curry!
Curry!